Funding for WBUR comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
This is WBUR's All Things Considered. I'm Lisa Mullins. The Supreme Court's historic decision today to strike down affirmative action in college admissions is of particular consequence in Massachusetts. The state has 149 public and private colleges and universities. WBUR's Max Larkin has been reading the decision today and gathering reaction to it. He joins me now in the studio. Max, how does the decision by the court have a greater impact in this region than in others?
I think you hit at it already. I mean, it just happens to be a state, for reasons of history, that is rich in colleges and universities that are all going to be reading this decision really closely. And it also has more than its share of really highly selective colleges where there's the most intense competition for seats. So two of the nation's four most selective and 10 of the nation's most selective 81 colleges. So, a lot of implications in the Bay State.
Because the more selective colleges tend to use affirmative action in admissions.
Exactly. And they have more control over the class they shape using it.
So why is Harvard extremely selective, one of the two schools at the center of this case? Lots of schools use racial preferences in admissions.
Yeah, I think, first of all, the plaintiff group, Students for Fair Admissions, thought that they had a case of discrimination against Asian Americans. But I think symbolically, there's a bigger story. Harvard kind of pioneered this holistic sort of non-determinative use of race in admissions. And by suing them and beating them, they really struck at the heart of affirmative action as it was practiced legally in this country until today. And then finally, there's the PR ratings factor. Harvard tends to get some attention that maybe another school wouldn't.
Just a little. What's the university saying in response to the ruling today?
Well, first, that they will follow the law as it's been newly reinterpreted. Their lawyers, of course, will be working on what is now allowed under the change that the court has proposed. But some things change, others stay the same. So said Claudine Gay, who will take over as Harvard's president in just a couple of days, in a video statement released this afternoon.
We will comply with the court's decision, but it does not change our values. We continue to believe deeply that a thriving, diverse intellectual community is essential to academic excellence and critical to shaping the next generation of leaders.
So if Claudine Gay, the incoming president of Harvard, says that it will comply with the court's decision but doesn't have to change its values, it has to change something because its way of selecting students has just been ruled unconstitutional.
Yeah, that's unmistakable here. They have to go back to the drawing board, so to speak. So colleges will no longer be able to give a kind of determined formal tip to, say, a black student and an Asian student on the bubble. They can't give a formal preference to the black student in the spirit of diversity. And as we've seen, Lisa, when systems like that come to an end in statewide bans in California and Michigan, diversity tends to suffer. You tend to see fewer black and Latino students on those most selective campuses. And that alone comes with a sense of loss for some people. I spoke to Anthony Abraham Jack, who's a sociologist of education at the Harvard Graduate School of Education, headed to BU in just a couple days. And he started out as a low-income black student in Miami. And he said that now overthrown system of race-conscious admissions made his journey possible.
I would not be Amherst and Harvard alum and a tenured professor at Boston University if it wasn't for a university's ability to say, he has potential and we're going to bet on him.
I think an interesting point that Jack makes is that, you know, college admissions is a very competitive game, and he thinks that there may still be paths for black and Latino students into highly selective schools, but it's going to help if those students have, you know, a really one-to-one experience with a guidance counselor, tons of family resources, and so this is going to disadvantage the already disadvantaged.
So what does the ruling today by the Supreme Court mean for other colleges and universities that may not be as selective as Amherst or Harvard? And we're talking here about both public and private schools.
Yeah, I think you saw a shudder nationwide as every college that conducts an admissions process realized that they might have to fine-tune, refine, change what they were doing. But, you know, I do think there's still room to interpret this decision. It's only hours old. You know, I had more than one legal expert tell me today that the decision was surprisingly limited. They stopped short of saying it guts affirmative action. At the end of the decision, Lisa, it says it does not say that diversity is never a compelling interest for a college to pursue. It does not say that students can't talk about their race when they're applying to college, and it doesn't say that universities can't consider their race when they do talk about it. I spoke to Ivan Espinoza Madrigal. He's the executive director of Lawyers for Civil Rights, which supports affirmative action. And so when many diversity advocates sounded pretty downhearted today, he said, in effect, we dodged a bullet.
This is not by any means outlawing affirmative action. It does not overrule any previous affirmative action cases. The court has overturned precedent it doesn't like. In this case, it didn't do that.
Now, at the risk of getting too optimistic for the pro-affirmative action side, I had another lawyer tell me today that this may just be setting up yet sterner challenges to the practice of promoting diversity coming down the pike already in the Fourth Circuit, so next session in the Supreme Court.
So, Max, the practical impact of this will be what? What will the ruling change, not just at Harvard, but elsewhere? And also, what are students and prospective students telling you?
Well, I think the thing that we have observed in those prior statewide bans has been described by one economist as a cascade effect, where Black and Latino students either don't apply or don't get into the most selective institutions and go to the less selective peer institution in the University of California system, for example. People on campus at Harvard are fearful of that outcome. They've kind of come, many of them, to cherish the diversity that has grown at that school in recent years. I spoke to Rebecca Zhang, who's a rising sophomore at Harvard. She interns with the Coalition for a Diverse Harvard, which opposed the outcome that came out today. And I asked Rebecca whether her classmates actually care about the stakes of this case. They got in. Does it matter to them? And she says, judging from their reaction today, they care a lot.
Harvard students are angry about this decision, and we're going to keep fighting. And I think it's not even just about getting into Harvard and once you're there, you're done. It's about creating a multiracial democracy and making sure that there are equitable opportunities.
Zhang, Lisa, is one of the students who's assembling a rally on campus for this Saturday afternoon, and she says she expects it to be well attended.
That's a pro-affirmative action rally.
Exactly.
If a school wants to build a racially diverse student body, now that it can't use affirmative action the way it has been, what can it do without violating the Constitution?
I think that's where it gets really tricky, and we're going to feel it out. Practically speaking, in the back and forth of case law, there have been things that have been tried before to use geography or socioeconomic status as a kind of metonym for race, you know, picking students based on those things and hoping that you get something like the diversity that you've seen so far. Also, recruitment in sort of underrepresented areas of the country, whether they be urban or rural, I think admissions officers are going to be traveling to both. But what we have found so far in the experience of states that have banned outright affirmative action has been that those things do not make up for the kind of loss that comes with a ban. So I don't think we can expect some decline, some change on those campuses in the years ahead.
Final question, Max. Who benefits from today's ruling?
That is a difficult question. I think, judging from past experience, we can expect white students and, to a lesser extent, Asian students to benefit who are applying to selective schools, as it has historically meant that fewer Black and Latino students will get in.
Based on what we've seen in the past. WBR education reporter Max Larkin, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.